Going Linux, episode 328, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want, you can send us feedback at goinglinux@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback. Hi there, Bill.
Hi there, Larry. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Lots of technology adventures this week. How about you?
Yes, I am breaking in my new machine, so I'm still...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. After getting mad at some of the Linux providers, I said to heck with it and found what I wanted. You know, I was looking for certain hardware, so I bought an Alienware 17.
Nice.
Gaming up top. Yep, it's time to update my technology. So it's a beautiful machine. I like it a lot. And I hear that you've had adventures too.
Yes, adventures with Dell XPS 13s. But it's way too long to go into here. Eventually, I'll have things up and running and have more to report. But not today.
Well, we were talking about before we started recording. You could make a whole podcast just for that. Oh, well. The new machine's nice. I have to say, you know, my old machine I thought was a beast. You know, mm-hmm. It was when I bought it, but the technology has come a long way. This new machine is got stuff that... I'm just amazed. You know, my old machine had an i7 third generation, and this one has the i7 seventh generation.
Oh, that's a big difference. Yeah, yeah.
So
speed
anyway,
alone, right?
Speed alone, it can do things my other one would just be choking on. But probably the thing that makes me the happiest, because I'm a gamer and I have to play games, is that it has not the mobile version, but the full version of the NVIDIA GTX 1070 with 8 gigs of RAM on the video card.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that makes such a huge difference, because the old one was an old, the mobile version, it was GTX 660M. Mm-hmm. So when you compare, I pulled up the specs, I was looking at it, it's like, this 1070 is just chewing through stuff. I mean, not that it's really Linux related, but there's a games run on the Crysis engine that it can really tax a processor. My old one would sit there and, you know, croak at, you know, 20, 25. I couldn't have everything set up. You know, I'd have it on like medium settings. This one, I just cranked everything to ultra, and it just sits there and runs it at 75, 80 and doesn't even blink. I'm like, wow, technology. So
wow. Yeah, well, not being a gamer, I'm not sure what those settings really mean, but it sounds impressive.
You're like, whatever. But I'm hoping that, you know, once I finally we talk about different ways that I'm going to use it. Right now I'm using it to run virtual machines so I can test a bunch of Linux distros and run them. And so hopefully soon, if it works out, I might just set up a dual boot so I can run it on the base hardware. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's got there's extra things I got to take into account, because there's special keys on this keyboard, and I want to make sure
right.
I can. So anyway, long story short, it's a beast of a machine. It's just amazing how technology, and it's good to know that in 6 months, this one will be outdated.
Yes, of course. That's the way it goes, if it even takes 6 months. But, right. Yeah, Well, shall we get into our feedback?
Yeah, so let's get into our feedback, because we could sit here and talk about our exploits for 6 hours and everybody's gonna be bored to death.
Yep. Okay. Well, our first is from Tony. He needs some help with his screen resolution. And so here is Tony's email. Hey, Larry and Bill, I have a 50-inch TV, and the display in Ubuntu is saying that it is only a 32-inch one. Again, it's only giving me two resolution choices. Please help me. I lost all of my icons on my desktop. So far to the left, or if you will, off to the left of the screen is completely empty. This happened before I even sent your email. I don't know what to do. Regards, Tony from Cherry Hill. Yeah, so he and I went back and forth a couple of times on email. And I think it may have to do with the screen resolution not being recognized properly with this 50-inch television, especially since it registers as a 32-inch. So I gave him some directions on the display configuration, the display preferences, and setting that up. I also gave him a link to our article on setting up a television as a monitor. And hopefully between those two things, we've been able to resolve Tony's issue. And I haven't heard back from him. So I'm assuming either that he's completely off the grid and nothing works anymore, or everything's working fine. And by the way, it's quite often with a television used as a monitor that the system, the Linux system, doesn't recognize the correct size of the monitor. And that's just one of those little metadata tags that the TV provides to identify itself. And I'm suspecting that the manufacturers, depending on the manufacturer, will use the same tag on all of the sizes of the same or similar model. And so, you know, from the 32 to the 50 or larger inch versions, they're using the same tag, and that it's all, you know, identifying itself as a 32-inch. But a monitor is a monitor, and when it connects to Linux, it should give you the right set of display settings. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, the instructions in our article on how to connect a television set by VGA and use it as a high-definition monitor should work for you to determine through some Linux applications what the monitor is capable of and making the appropriate settings so that you can get a higher resolution. I hope that we've got Tony set up properly. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking we do. And Tony,
wow.
Get back to us. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, 50-inch monitor. That's my kind of guy.
Yeah, that's nice and big.
Yeah, even I can see that. Okay. Without my glasses. Okay.
There you go.
Moving right on, we've got another email from Rory, and he's asking about app images. He writes, Larry and Bill, I've been enjoying your podcast for over a year now, and I've learned a lot about Linux from your show. I have been using Linux Mint both 17 and 18 for about a year and a half, and love it. But one of the issues has been old versions of software in the repositories. I recently discovered app images, one being OpenShot video editor. What is your opinion of them? Is there a downside to this way of running the latest software? Thanks again for your show, Roy Dressel Photography.
Okay, and Roy provides us a link to his photography.
Mm-hmm. Studio, he does.
Which, hey, I think I'll just include that in the show notes.
You're
free
a nice
advertising
guy.
There, Roy. Yeah, there you go. And he's located in Visalia, California.
Oh, okay. I see how it is, because he's Californian. He gets a free plug. You know, not us bums from New Mexico. Okay, I see how it is.
Listen, if you have a website where you're trying to sell something and you are a listener to the podcast and you write us with a question and you provide us a link to your business, we'll include it in the show. What the heck?
Okay,
we did it for Troy out in Wisconsin as well. So
okay. Well, then you're okay then. But no, seriously, yeah. Roy, thanks for writing in. I don't do a lot with OpenShot editor, but Larry might know a little bit more than I do.
Yeah, so this is less a question around OpenShot itself and more a question around the app images. And I haven't used app images. I've used the snap packages. And between snap packages and app images, these are some new ways of providing, or at least attempting to provide, a universal package management system that will work across different versions of Linux, regardless of whether you're using RPM or deb or whatever. And the snap packages work just fine. I'm assuming that the app images do as well. So, Roy, you're asking if there are any pluses and minuses to using snap packages and app images. And I think the pluses are you can keep up to date a little more for a particular application like OpenShot. You can stay up to date a little bit more easily. One of the downsides is you are reliant on a third party, if you will, to maintain those images up to date and make sure that they're compatible and so on. So there's a fraction of a risk there. One of the things that Ubuntu Mate at least is doing, and I think it's across all of the Ubuntus, is with the snap packages, they are vetting those just as they do with the regular repositories. And for those vetted ones, at least Ubuntu Mate is going to be in their next release, including snap packages listed in their software boutique. So at least with snap packages, there's some added level of trust there that may not exist with app images. But again, I have to give the disclaimer that I haven't used or tried any app images, but that's the pluses and minuses, I think, overall. And by outdated software in the repositories for Linux Mint, I think Linux Mint is probably of the Ubuntu derivatives the one that has the biggest problem with outdated packages, mainly because they're on, I think it's still a 16.04 base or
Really?
something like that. Yeah, it's one of the features now of Linux Mint that they maintain even through their 6 month releases. They maintain those images on the last long term support release from Ubuntu. And
Wow.
so, you know, they are a little bit behind until the next long term support comes out. So the packages are a little bit behind, but they do try to keep them relatively up to date. So, but that doesn't occur with every package out there. So you're a little bit behind with Linux Mint. Yep. What do you think, Bill? Any other thoughts on app images, or have you tried snap packages or anything like
I
that?
haven't. I've heard of them and I've read about them, and but I tend to try to stay in the repositories. Now, I thought Linux Mint, their whole spiel was that they, I didn't know they were still in 16, but that they would found the best and that worked and just stayed with it until the next, when they moved to the next version of it, and then they would update. I thought they would stay, even though it was older, it worked. So that's what they wanted. They wanted stuff that was stable and it would work.
That's one of the reasons why they stick with the long-term support release. And it is a little bit dated, given that Ubuntu has moved on from there with their latest releases. And eventually they'll have another long-term support release, and Linux Mint's next release after that will adopt that and move forward, I'm sure.
Well, I haven't tried. I should try it, and but okay.
Okay, there we
All
go.
right.
Okay, our next email is from someone who didn't give us their name, but their on-screen handle is Skyward Abyss, and asks about System 76 stickers. Here we go. It says, "Hi, Larry, and insert new co-host name here." I have been
What?
listening to your podcast from the beginning and made it to about 140 or so. So I'm guessing that maybe that's about the time that you came on as the co-host, taking over from Tom.
I thought it
So
was in the
that's
200s.
well, maybe it's in the 200s, but he's back in some of the older episodes.
Oh,
So
okay.
anyway, in about that episode, we talked about System 76 and the ability to get stickers from them for free by sending in a self-addressed stamped envelope. And so here's the rest of his email. He said, I wanted to update you on the link for the free stickers at System 76 with a self-addressed stamped envelope. In the show notes for episode 130 for the System 76 stickers, your link is no longer valid. Their new link is, and he provides the link, which is system76.com/swag/stickers. Pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Keep up the great work, and thanks for all your effort in helping new users become proficient using Linux. So I have updated the link in that old episode to the System 76 new link for their stickers. So when you click on it now, it should be good. And we'll include it, of course, in the show notes for this episode.
Larry?
Mm-hmm.
That was 170 episodes ago.
Yeah, it was a while. He's got a little catching up to do, that's for sure.
I'm just sitting there going, I don't know. Maintaining, you're a good guy going back and updating that, but I'm like, that's a long time ago.
Well, I appreciate people letting us know when we've got broken links, and I'm just glad that System 76 is still giving out stickers for free.
Yeah, we won't go there. Okay. I'm not happy with them right now.
Speaking of previous hosts.
Yeah. Surge. No, not that Surge.
Oh, okay.
wrote about Skype alternatives. By the way, Larry, have you heard from Surge?
Not recently. He's off doing his non-podcast life, so no big deal.
Wait a minute. There's a life without podcasts?
Well, if you really want it. I don't know why.
Anyway, he writes, "Hello, Larry." Forgetting somebody here.
Yeah.
There are many good Skype alternatives. Jitsu, Framatalk, Ring, Wire, Peer.in, Hubble.in, and Tox. Okay, I haven't heard any, maybe two of those. Anyway, And if the person searching an alternative for Skype uses Google, there is Hangouts. Best regard, Surge. Okay, well, we were just talking about Skype because it was acting weird this morning. And the problem is that some of the alternatives just don't work well for us. I'm not saying they don't work, but they don't work well for us. And also, if we have someone that wants to come on in a podcast, everybody seems to have Skype. So we're trying to, you know, it works for us for what we need most of the time. But if we have someone who is wants to come in and be part of the podcast, we can include them using Skype. So some of them might not have the features you want. Unfortunately, Skype has what we need right now when it works. There's big quotation marks there.
When it works,
But right now, if we could find something that worked as well as Skype, we would move immediately. Do not pass go and do not collect $200. We'd be gone. But right now, we've got to put up with it until we find something better.
Right. And the conditions for us are it has to work on Linux, it has to work reliably, and it has to work with other operating systems as well and be easy to set up on those other operating systems. That's really the kicker, because not everybody that we talk to, and it's been a while since we interviewed somebody on the podcast, but not everybody that we talk to on the podcast is using Linux. So it can't be a Linux-only solution. It has to be truly cross-platform and easy to set up on these other systems, and hopefully something that everyone is familiar with. And Skype fits that bill. So does Google Hangouts for the most part. But, you know, I use Google Hangouts for business on my Mac, and it has some issues even on the Mac, let alone on Linux. And I'm not sure that it's absolutely reliable for all of the things that we need, but that's definitely a possibility. I mean, if Skype discontinued support for Linux today, I think Google Hangouts is probably the one we would switch to. But I've heard of Jitsi. I think I tried it quite a long time ago. I've heard of Hubble.in and Talks, but I haven't used either of those. Don't know how they work. Maybe it's time to do a little experimentation, Bill. But, you know, our backup, if Skype fails, is to pick up the telephone. That thing that's sitting on your, maybe on a table that you haven't used in a while, and maybe a mobile phone, like a cell phone, would work. So that's our backup for now.
I've got my Galaxy 8 Android. It's ready to go.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm ready. All right.
Yes. Okay. Our next email is from longtime listener Nancy, who asks about the book. So I think I mentioned that I wrote a book. Nancy writes, congratulations on your book. I know it takes a lot of work to put it together, even if it's well organized in your mind. Putting it all into words is a whole lot different than just using the information. I've written one called Your Data, Your Devices, and You, Easy to Follow Instructions to Reduce Your Risk of Data Loss, Device Infection, and Identity Theft. I'm going to try to get it published in early August. You mentioned that you use Smashwords. I'm going to look at it, but what other resources did you use? What were your reasons for choosing Smashwords over other platforms? Is there a physical book option as well with Smashwords, or is it strictly digital? Thanks, Nancy. Well, I chose Smashwords partially on doing some research and finding out that they had a very easy way to set things up so that they take care of doing the ebook configurations for you without you having to install something like Calibre and create the ebooks yourself. One of the downsides is you have to provide the book to them in Microsoft Word 1997 format, the old .doc format. But once you do that, the conversion is automatic, and there's a little bit of configuration you have to do in the doc format. But all that works just fine from LibreOffice once you figure out how to format it the way they want it formatted. And it works out really great. And as you know, with the book, I provided a PDF version for free. If you want the ebook versions, August 1st is when it'll go on sale. And by the way, by the time this is out, it will be on sale because it'll be after August 1st we release this episode. So anyway, back to Nancy's question about a physical book version. I know they take care of the distribution at Smashwords to places like Barnes & Noble and some of the other bookstores, but I don't know whether or not they actually offer a printed version in those bookstores. I know Smashwords site itself doesn't give you a printed version option, but I don't know. Maybe they print a version and send it out to the bookstores? I don't know, but certainly most people, I think, today are looking for electronic versions, whether it's PDF or ebook. But if you want a printed version of the book, let me know, and I'll find out. I know there are places you can create printed versions and that sort of thing. And if there's an interest in that, let me know, and I'll make that available.
Hey, I want a physical version. I want it personally signed and autographed, and I'd like it written in your ink that has your blood in it, so it's just, you know, it's really truly you. Can I get that?
I'll work on that.
Well, congratulations.
I'll let you know when it's done.
Hey, congratulations on the book. How long? Now, you wrote that whole thing on Linux, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And how long did it take you to figure out the format using LibreOffice?
Well, the LibreOffice part was very easy. Really? Figuring out what Smashwords actually meant by its format requirements, that was the challenge. So it took a little trial and error, but I finally figured it out, and it was well worth it because everything was automatic after that. So really good. And congratulations to Nancy as well on your new book as well. And let us know when you've got it published, and we'll put a link to it in our show notes and provide a little publicity for your book as well. And hopefully you get a lot of sales on that too. Your Data, Your Devices, and You, Easy to Follow Instructions to Reduce Your Risk of Data Loss, Device Infection, and Identity Theft. So, yeah, that sounds like a topic that is cross-platform for sure.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Nancy. Yeah, let
Yep.
us know when it's published, because I'd like to see what it looks like. I might even buy it.
Yeah,
Hey.
there you go.
Yeah. Okay, our next email comes from Mike, and he comments on creating a network drive. And he writes, "Hello. I am hoping you can help guide me in the right directions." Oh boy, he's in trouble. I have a desktop and a laptop, both running Ubuntu Mate on the same Wi-Fi network at home. I would like to create a network drive on my laptop that connects to my home directory on my desktop. How can I accomplish this? Thank you so much, 73 Mike.
So you want a drive connected, I'm assuming by USB, to your laptop that you can connect to from your home directory on your desktop. I think I would do it the other way around, mainly because a laptop is typically something that you turn on and off and carry around. But maybe you've got a gaming machine like Bill does, and it's a 17-inch that weighs like 400 pounds, and maybe you
It's
need
not
to
400 pounds.
well, what, about 8 pounds, something like that?
It's about 8, 9 pounds.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to carry around that thing
Hey,
for a long
carrying
time, but
around
you can
makes you
move.
strong.
Yes, okay. What doesn't?
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Anyhow, so to do this, first of all, you have to set up folder sharing. I don't recall the steps, but that's what you would Google for, is sharing folders on Ubuntu or Ubuntu Mate. And once you've set up the folder sharing on the laptop, you can share the folder that represents the network drive as though it were a folder. And maybe it's even a setting that specifically says share network drive. I don't remember. But it's very easy to do in the settings. And once you've done that, you should be able to go into the network, open the file browser on the desktop, go to the network, browse the network, and you should be able to see it right there, assuming that both computers are on the same Wi-Fi network. That's the trick. They have to be on the same Wi-Fi network. And if this is at home, I'm assuming you have one Wi-Fi network, but just in case you have more than one, they have to be on the same network and you have to enable the sharing. And once you've enabled sharing, you should be able to browse from one computer to the other and just open it up. And if you want a permanent link, you can create a permalink, if you will, a desktop shortcut or a shortcut that appears whenever you go into the network browser, and it will appear there. So hopefully that helps. Little arm waving there, but with a little Google search on the Ubuntu Mate forum, you should be able to find that without any trouble at all.
Okay.
All right. Have you had any experience hands-on with sharing?
No,
Okay.
I have not messed with it at all. I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean, I could do it if I've read the man pages. There's plenty of, but I have never needed it because I usually only have one that I use. And so, anyway.
Yep. So anyway, next email is from Bob, who is the person who had the mouse button Pistromo offer to help.
Oh, I remember
Yeah.
that one. Didn't he have
Yes.
trouble mapping the keys or something?
Exactly. So Bob says, "I listened to episode 326 and heard an offer from Steve to help me use Pistromo to program my mouse buttons. I actually solved that problem about 2 days before I listened to the episode, and I am going to send an email about it for the next listener feedback. In the meantime, I don't need Steve's help, but I think it's polite to say thank you for his offer regardless. Please pass him my email address, and I will do that. Thanks, Bob." Okay. I'm glad you got things all straightened around, Bob, and I'm looking forward to hearing how you solve that problem. With
Yeah, I
the
am
new
too.
gaming machine you have, Bill, I know it's got some extra keys that you may just need those tips for.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for doing all the work for me. I really appreciate
There you go.
it. Thanks, Bob. Okay, our next email comes from Tony, and he wants to contribute network diagram icons. And he writes, "Hi, guys. I am a systems admin at a telecommunications company, and often times I'm asked to create network diagrams for our network implementations. In an effort to go fully open source, I have used LibreOffice Draw to do my diagrams. However, I have noticed a lack of manufacturer icons on the internet. I have started creating my own repository of images in SVG format that I can use. I'd like to publish this online for others to use. However, I do not know where I can post them. I was thinking about using GitHub, but I believe there is a storage limit there, and ideally I prefer not to pay. Understandable. Mm-hmm. Let me know what you think, Tony. Wow. I don't know about that. Does GitHub have a limit?
I don't know. I've never tried that. But the LibreOffice folks take repository contributions for templates for office-type documents. So word processor documents, spreadsheet documents, presentation document templates. And I haven't explored to see if they accept anything for images for draw, but you might want to check on the LibreOffice site and see how you can contribute templates or images there. There's also an open clip art, openclipart.org, where you can simply post your images there. There are tons and tons. Well, let me see. Looking at their site, as of today, there are 129,268 clip art images available. 68 of them were contributed today, 22 of them were contributed yesterday, and so on and so on. So, and there are comments on each of them, and they're varying quality. A lot of them are very professionally done, and so that's another place you can contribute your images in an open source way. And I think all you have to do is just sign up for a free account with them, and you can upload the images. I haven't uploaded any images. I've certainly used some of their images, and it's definitely a resource. There are other places you can...
Internet Archive, right?
Yeah, Internet Archive. You can put them there. That's where we put our episodes of this podcast, but you can upload images there as well. And again, you just have to sign up for a free membership in their site, and you can upload whatever you want, and you can create an entire library just for your images if you want. Mm-hmm. So lots of different places. We've just given you three options, and hopefully you can find more. Let us know where your images are, because every once in a while I want to create a network diagram and I'd like to be able to use some of your images too. So let us know where you end up putting them.
Cool.
Our next email is from David, who wrote hardware, firmware, software, Bill 1, Larry, David, and Dr. Google 0. Bill wins. So what all that means is David and Bill and I have gone back and forth, and apparently he's gone to Dr. Google as well for solutions on his problem, and he's finally found a solution. So rather than go through all the emails back and forth, let's just read this last one because it talks about happy things.
Yes, but you could start at Bill wins again. I like
yes.
that. Yes,
okay. Bill wins. There we go.
Okay.
It's still a bit early to be 100% sure, but it looks like a reformat of the full drive did the trick using GNOME Disks, the Disks app that is part of Linux Mint. I fully reformatted the disk, including erasing the data, and the problem so far has disappeared. I had to update the FS tab to a new UUID, Universal Identifier, I forget what the second U stands for, and do a chown, but that was it. It looks like I was focused on the wrong idea, that the problem was related to power, since only through a shutdown of 5 or more minutes was the disk able to recover. And that was the only solution offered in a web search of SSD disappears. The problem became more and more frequent and lately became pretty consistent. Any copy to the disk or even a save would cause it to dismount and fully disappear. A re-login did nothing and a reboot brought up the emergency mode. Only a full power down and then a 10-minute wait permitted a successful boot. But then the next copy and boom. As long as the disk was available, reads were okay. I was able to access any file, copy it to any other disk, etc. But a write activity of any sort, paste, save, rename, delete, etc., caused the disk to disappear. Bill's educated guess, i.e. in-depth scientific analysis on based on years of experience, that a bad Sector 1 was the cause, now makes sense. Once I reformatted the disk and made it to one large partition, I was able to copy back from my backups over 10,000 items totaling 120 gigabytes without a problem. My current guess is that an uncontrolled shutdown, power outage, during a directory activity, copy, save, rename, delete, etc., caused a problem that metastasized and accelerated. My sense, a power down temporarily solved each instance, resetting some internal pointer on the SSD, but before long, the whole directory became corrupted, as per any write activity. It's still early days, but I'm optimistic. Thanks again for your help. Bestest, David, your loyal fan since episode number one, your number one expatriate Canadian fan in Israel, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks, David. I'm glad things worked out for you. And Bill, congratulations on providing the successful and happy ending to David's story.
Well, it's still early days, but I'm hoping he's got it fixed.
Yeah, I hope so too.
But I had, now it wasn't on SSD, but I had a similar problem on an old spinning drive, and that was when I was still chief executive minion.
Okay.
And if you remember, I was complaining about my directories getting corrupted and having to deal with it. And I said, well, you know what? It's probably the same thing on the SSD, because I had I can't remember what happened. I lost power and then it come back up, and it just started acting up since then. So I said, hey, if you got backups, that might be the way to go. I also sent him some links to some open source programs. I don't know if he used them. David, if you use those programs, how about let me know if they worked for you? I don't have the email that I sent back to him, but
yeah, there was a SmartMon tools something like that. Yeah. Yeah, we'll include a link in the show notes to that.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if he used those, because it looks like those can detect the bad sector. And, you know, SSDs, they can have bad sectors, just like a real hard drive. So I'm hoping that the format just fixed whatever was the problem, flipped the bit switch back or whatever. But, yeah, David, keep us informed how it goes, and if you have any more problems, because that was a real interesting problem. I know I had to sit there and think about that one for a while. What did you recommend to Larry?
I don't remember, but it was obviously unsuccessful. So
usually you're the one that gets the ones right. I mean, I'm bound to get something right after about 72 fails. So, hey,
this is a good one, Bill.
Yeah. I'm glad that it worked. David, just let us know how it goes and if a problem comes back up. But anyway, I'm happy that you're working, and working again.
And that's just the benefit of in-depth scientific analysis based on years of experience.
Okay, David, here's the truth. I actually had to ask Larry, and it was really his idea, and I just took it. You know,
No.
Okay, moving on. We got an email from Troy, and he says he just learned something new. Uh-oh. Okay. Hello, Larry, and the artist who was formerly known as Chief Executive Minion. Oh, boy, this one's going to be a good one. I just learned something new today and have been geeking out about it, so I thought I'd share it with you while it's still on the top of my mind. Our new church we have been members at for the last year displays the entire service on a screen from a projector using Microsoft PowerPoint. The lady who normally does this is on vacation for the next week and a half, and asked me if I wouldn't mind putting together the service for this weekend. Without thinking about it, I said, sure. Oh, golly. I'm just sorry. I had to think there for a minute. Give me 2 seconds. Okay. So then they have been systematically sending me information to include in the presentation. I guess I forgot to mention to her that I don't own MS Office. Uh-oh.
Yep.
I use LibreOffice Office or Google Docs, so they sent me their PowerPoint template. Since PowerPoint is the only application in the suite that doesn't translate very well with LibreOffice Impress, needless to say, when I opened their file, it was completely butchered. Oh man. Okay. Man, I'm feeling for you, Troy. Okay. Continuing. So I spent hours and hours over the last couple of evenings completely recreating it from scratch. However, they don't have any Wi-Fi at our church and are running an ancient laptop with Vista. Oh, it gets worse.
Yes, this is getting worse.
Oh, Troy, man, the pain. Okay. The latest version of Libre doesn't want to run on it without crashing. Oh, man. Boy, he's learning a lot here.
Yeah, so it's MS Office 2003, I'm guessing they have. So anyway,
running on Vista. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I decided to present using my laptop with Linux Mint. I also wanted to be able to sit near the back of the church and run this remotely somehow, so I don't have to sit near the front by my laptop and the projector. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Troy, you're killing me, man. Okay. I did some searching online and found out there is an app in the Android store called Impress Remote, which is free. If your computer is on a Wi-Fi network or if it has a Bluetooth capacity built in, you can connect your phone to your laptop with Bluetooth, for example, and remotely control your Impress presentation wirelessly. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
It works really, really slick. You can not only advance the slides, but it has a built-in tile view of all your slides so you don't have to print out a handout to follow. It also has a virtual laser pointer built in. You just tap on the device in a place on the slide and a red dot appears on the screen. It's really cool. It sounds cool.
Yeah.
The app is free. The Office suite is free. Just goes to show you another example of open source software at work making our lives easier. Keep up the good work, guys. Troy, a.k.a. Jack Durth. Okay, first off, I don't know if your life was easier. Man, you went through... First you recreated it, then you didn't have Wi-Fi, then it was running on Vista. Man, does he like, get any, like... Did he unlock any achievements or anything with this?
I don't know.
Man.
I think the easiest part was finding the Android app that remotely controlled the Impress presentation software from the back of the room by way of Bluetooth. That's the feat right there. Well, the hard work was recreating the presentation template.
It just goes to show you that Linux people, I mean, most people would say, okay, I recreated the template. I'll just use my... laptop present it, but no, us Linux people, we have to make our lives easier, so we have to find a way to control it remotely from the back of the room using Bluetooth. And hey, it has a free virtual laser pointer too, which only makes it better.
Yeah, you can get remote controls that you can purchase that hook into a, you know, a USB port with a little dongle, and you can remote control it, but that requires to purchase the hardware. And, you know, we Linux people, we want stuff for free.
Yeah. So, you know, Troy, props, dude. That you, I'm impressed. I really am.
Yep.
I mean, way to go. I officially give you the co-host award for Super Geek. Congratulations.
All right, perfect, perfect. Yes, congratulations on making that work. And thanks for sharing that with us. That is going to help someone, I'm sure. that's great. I didn't even know that app existed. It's nice.
I didn't either.
It does.
We learned something new today, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
Bob has solved his mouse configuration problem. And here are the instructions that we were asking him to provide us.
Okay.
Look at that. Here we go. So we'll have a link to some of his stuff in the show notes. Hi, Larry and Bill. As you remember, I have been trying to remap the buttons on my two Logitech M570 wireless trackball for a few months. I want the two little buttons on the upper edge to do page up and page down instead of their default forward and back. I've tried a bunch of things that didn't work, and listener Steve even offered to help me directly using a program named Pystromo in episode 326. I'm grateful for Steve's offer, but I struck gold just 2 days before listening to that episode. I am happy to report that the problem is solved. I found the solution by luck as I continued searching the web for information about mapping mouse buttons. In an absolute coincidence, a gentleman named Paul Rubin, who I don't know at all, posted instructions for remapping buttons on the exact trackball I use at this website, and at spartanideas.msu.edu. So we'll include a link to the full URL in the show notes. Yeah. All I had to do was clean up the residue of my previous attempts by deleting a bunch of files in several directories and then follow Mr. Rubin's instructions as written. They are simple and easy, just like I thought remapping should be. I believe the problem I was having before using the solution was that I mixed partial solutions of several different types and left all of them slightly incomplete. Yep,
I've done that.
That'll do it. Yeah. None of them worked the way I used them, and they may have interfered with each other. Once I cleaned things up and followed Mr. Rubin's instructions, everything worked perfectly on the first try. The only information not on Mr. Rubin's website is the fact that the XTE is a program that simulates a key being pressed. It comes in the XAutomation package. I read about it by typing man.xte in a terminal, and the whole solution makes perfect sense. Thank you both and Steve for helping me. I have a brand new, much more interesting problem that I'll send along to you in a second email so I can keep this one from getting any longer. And I don't think he's sent that one to us yet. Oh, yes, he has. It's the next one. Here you go, Bill. This one's yours to read.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Hey, Bob. You know, I just thought we'd just talk to you. Oh, we did. Okay. So let's see what we can do with this. Now, Bob has a strange network problem. Hi, Bill and Larry. Hey, I got top billing.
Yes.
Hey, did you look at the other one? He wrote your name first, and then on this one, he wrote my name first. Hey, Bob, that's the way to play the field. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think he's trying
anyway,
to be fair.
Yeah. He wrote, "Hi, Bill and Larry. Bob here again with my second problem. The network on my Ubuntu Mate laptop stopped working. I can connect to my router's Wi-Fi and to my cell phone's wireless hotspot, but the connection doesn't establish internet contact. Browsers, ping, etc. can't reach the internet, even though the router and cell phone are happily telling me my laptop is connected. Here are a few more details. Number one, this problem suddenly started. I visited my mom one weekend, and the last thing I did before coming home on Sunday afternoon was to place an order to let her on Amazon. The laptop worked perfectly. I shut it down normally and drove home. That was the last time the computer accessed the internet from Ubuntu Mate. On Monday, I turned on the laptop, and this problem was happening. Ubuntu Mate hasn't connected to the internet since that Sunday afternoon. Number two, the laptop is dual boot, so I rebooted into Linux Mint and everything works perfectly. I'm typing this email in Mint right now. I use Ubuntu Mate 98% of the time, no particular reason, so Mint was never active while I was at my mom's house. Number three, I verified that Ubuntu Mate does connect wirelessly to both my home router and my cell phone's wireless hotspot. I've also plugged it into my router directly with an Ethernet cable, and I still can't get to the internet. Number four, I figured that since Mint worked and Mate didn't, a configuration file must be damaged somewhere or a background update went bad. I used TimeShift to restore Mate to a state 1 week before I visited my mom with it, when everything worked perfectly. No dice. I still can't reach the internet. The fact that the laptop works when I boot into Mint tells me that my hardware is working correctly. The fact that the problem only appears in Ubuntu Mate, he didn't put a Mate by Madden because I know what he's talking about. Ubuntu Mate tells me the problem is tied to the operating system, Using time shift to revert to a known good state should have fixed an operating system, but it didn't. So what do you think? I've searched extensively, and the solutions I find consistently address driver problems or incorrectly configured new installations of Linux or a home router. I haven't found anyone whose computer worked one day and not the next. By the way, Mom lives 3 hours away, so I can't take this computer back to her house to test it on her network until I've seen her again in about a month. Her network is totally unsafe and insecure. My dad set it up using Windows XP and passwords so weak they are useless. For various reasons, I am not able to change things, so I use Linux instead of Windows when I visit. I don't access sensitive websites, and I use a VPN when using the network for anything more sensitive than reading news sites. Do you think I could have picked up some form of persistent Linux malware? Any suggestions you have on how to track this down would be appreciated. I'm willing to nuke and pave with a new Ubuntu Mate install, but then I would never figure out what caused this problem. That, of course, assumes a nuke and pave actually solves the problem. Thanks, Bob.
Wow. I was thinking that until he said that he restored from a previous known good configuration using, what was it, time shift, I was thinking maybe he had enabled the firewall while at his mother's or during an update or something like that, and then all he has to do is disable the firewall, and maybe that would make it work. But since he restored from a previous configuration, it's obviously something else that's going on. Any thoughts, Bill?
I have two. It sounds like he's got a configuration file problem somewhere. If it works with the other Linux without a problem, we know it's not hardware, so we don't have to look at hardware. It's got to be a configuration file. I don't know of any. Now, I keep up on the latest Linux malware and stuff, and there's some out there, but most of it you have to have physical access to the machine. I'm not saying that there's not one I don't know about, but yeah, it kind of goes in contrary to what a lot of this malware does. So I don't think he has malware, because the malware usually wants you to be connected to the internet so they can spread malware and whatever. So I don't think it's malware. I think it's a configuration file. Is there a way, Larry, that he could he did time shift.
He's already done that. And presumably that's going to restore it to a previous image. But what I'm thinking now is it might not change the settings in his browser. So if that VPN you were using, Bob, was set up as a browser plugin on Firefox or on Chrome as one of their plugins, maybe there's a configuration in the VPN that is specific to your mother's connection to the internet. I would try disabling the VPN and other things related to the browser itself that may persist, across a restore to a previous image. It may sync up and update back to your new settings, even though you've restored your system to a previous version. When you connect your browser, it may update the settings to the latest ones you had when you last logged in, and maybe it's doing that with a VPN. So I would check anything that you changed while at your mother's house. The VPN settings, any firewall settings, any tweaks to make yourself secure on their insecure network. Just kind of retrace your steps there before you start looking for configuration file issues. And what you're tweaking there is configuration files, but at least you're doing it from within the browser itself. So I would A, check the browser settings and anything you set up in the browser, and then start thinking about, is there something in the in the Ubuntu Mate installation that's causing the problem.
Does Ubuntu Mate have a setting for like airplane mode?
I don't think
Well, just
so.
check
I don't
because maybe you
remember.
can check. I haven't used Ubuntu Mate enough, but maybe because the way he's describing it, it works when he boots into the Linux. So he might have, when he was doing all this stuff, if there is a thing that, because it's a laptop and you go on the airplane and tell you to turn off your electronic devices, they might have included a switch that kills the internet access. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out.
Yeah, I'm just going into my Ubuntu Mate connections, network connections. I don't see anything. I mean, you can manually go in and disable any of your connections, but he was saying that he's got, it's telling him that he's connected to the network, right? Yeah, so that's not going to be the solution. But I would check the browser first, any plugins on the browser, especially anything that you monkeyed with while you were trying to protect yourself from any infestation while on
Windows
this
XP strikes again.
insecure. Yes, there you go. So that's where I'd start, Bob. Let us know how it goes, and we'd be interested in what it actually ended up
Yeah,
being.
and I hope we can get that fixed. But yeah, that's cool. All
Yep.
right.
Okay, looks like you've got an
Well,
application
it's not
picked
really
this
an
time, though.
application. This is basically a website. And okay, guys, disclaimer: if you're not a Amazon Prime member, you can stop listening now. But if you have Amazon Prime, you have the music, and there's some sites that I've found that's a little wonky. When you're running in Linux. So, I listened to Prime. I actually got the upgraded membership because I wanted more. But the base, this works the same way. I wanted to listen to music while I'm browsing web or whatever. And so at one time, Amazon's website was kind of wonky and wouldn't let me, it would work, but you had to go through steps and stand on your head and spin around. Now it works flawlessly, and I really like how they really went and made it very accessible. I would suggest giving it a try. If you have Amazon Prime, you already have the music, and the way it's very pretty. It tells you about the artists and stuff like that. But I just found that it was working really well, and I wanted to let people know about it. That's all. We are not advertising for Amazon, but a lot of us use Prime for stuff, and I thought maybe it would be helpful, or you might not know that you had it, and it works really well in all the browsers I've tested in Chrome and Firefox. It works really well, and no problems whatsoever. Now I see that you have an application pick, so what do you got?
Yeah. Well, I was inspired by your Amazon Prime Music thing, and I looked up in my bookmark something that I haven't used in a little while. It's a command line music playing application over the internet, CMD, as in command, CMD.fm. Just do it. You'll see you can choose from all kinds of different genres, and you can listen to it in a browser tab while you're doing your
Nice.
work or
I didn't know
reading or
about that.
whatever you want. And yeah, and it works like, an old bulletin board service. You
Cool.
just type in the commands and it lets you mess around. So there you go.
Nice.
We'll include that link in the show
So
notes
I
too.
just noticed that you had to throw that totally free open source one in there.
Oh, I don't know whether it's open
Oh, is
source
it?
or not, but it's totally free. It's really old
Oh,
school though,
well,
so.
cool. Well, like I said, we're not endorsing anything, but we use products and stuff, and if I find that it works well on Linux or whatever, I want to let you guys know about it. Okay.
There you go. I like that Amazon Prime tip. That's
Yep.
pretty cool. Okay. Yeah. And I know that in our last episode, I think you talked about maybe doing an episode on reviews of distributions, but I also know that it's taken you a little bit longer to configure your new computer than you thought. So you probably haven't done any work on them yet, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, that's what I figured. So we'll have something for our next episode. It won't be a review, unless Bill gets one done really quick, which I don't expect will
Oh,
happen.
that's just rude.
You've got a, well, no, you've got a few things going on in your life between now and then, like moving into the new house, making sure your internet works, all that kind of stuff. So I don't expect that you're going to have any of that done. Just because you've got other stuff, more higher
That stupid
priority.
thing called life always gets in my way. But we'll guarantee you we'll have something. We don't know what it is yet, but we will.
As always, we don't know what our next episode is going to be, but it'll be great.
It's going to be awesome. Hey, we're going to make it great. Okay. We're going to be good. Okay. Okay. Until then, go to our website at goinglinks.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
If you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux Podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.